Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Welcome back to another episode of Open Floor, filling in for your host, Michael DePodPina. I'm Rohan Notkani, joined today by the host of the SI Weekly podcast, Slumming It on Open Floor, just, sullying his good reputation, the Minister of Philadelphia Sports Propaganda. It's John Gonzalez. Gons, how's it going, buddy?
Thank you so much for having me. This is very exciting. I have appeared on this program previously with Pina. I've guest hosted this program when you and Pina and Chris Herring were out. You have been on Sports Illustrated Weekly with me, which, by the way, please listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. But you and I have never done this show together, so I'm very excited to do it without Pina around so we can just slander the Boston Celtics.
Exactly. You tried to, in fact, engage in a hostile takeover of the show, and we reached a detente, and now we're here together. You know, it's funny, because we got a review one time.
It was aborted, much like Elon Musk trying to take over Twitter. Yeah,
exactly. We got a review one time that I don't understand where it came from, and I don't know if it was after you hosted the show or not, but the review was like, if I wanted to listen to a Philly Sports Homer podcast, I would do that instead. And I was like, How did you listen to Open Floor and get that impression listening to Pete and I need to like check the time.
Maybe it was after I hosted. No, because I thought when I hosted, we had Stavros, a comedian, on, and I'm relatively certain we spent most of the time talking about the Knicks, but I might be misremembering that. It seems like something that I would do, that I would like co-opt this program and turn it into like a very provincial Philadelphia sports podcast. And there's still time for that later in the show.
Yes,
but
exactly.
I remember it slightly different, but that person might be right.
Yeah, it's possible. It's possible. Well, Gons, we have some, some sad news to start the show today. Obviously,
yes.
On Sunday at 88, there's nearly... You can say Celtics legend. It's selling him short. Bill Russell dying at age 88 on Sunday. Man, it's kind of just hard to believe that someone like his life even existed, you know? And there's been so many beautiful tributes. Our colleague Chris Mannix writing a column today that his number 6 should be retired across the league. I'm fully in support of that. The thing that strikes me about Bill Russell is that, I joke on this podcast, like, I don't care about any basketball that happened before 1980, blah, blah, blah. Mostly just to dig at the Celtics titles that, that Pina's always talking about. But in all seriousness, I think like the basketball, when you talk about Bill Russell, the basketball really does come so far down the list, even though he's one of the most accomplished athletes in the history of sports, especially team sports. But just the issues that he stood for, not only when he was an athlete, I mean, someone who stood with Colin Kaepernick, for example, these last few years, and just reading the stories about the explicit racism that he dealt with. Mm-hmm. It's not that these things never happen anymore, but the degree to which they were happening to him, it's just hard to believe that it happened sometime. It's so far removed from ears and eyes reality, for example. Just truly an incredible person.
Yeah, I mean, you and I both on this program and elsewhere love to delight in making fun of the Boston Celtics. But when Bill Russell, somebody of his stature, passes, that goes, you know, like the snarkiness goes out the window, and like you can mm-hmm. fully appreciate him and his life as a person. And to be honest with you, like the preponderance of my thoughts about Bill Russell passing have nothing to do about basketball, yeah. right? Because he was an incredible all-time Hall of Famer, and you know, obviously before our era, but anybody who's a basketball fan is well acquainted with the type of player that Bill Russell was, how transformative he was. He won 11 championships. He was a 12-time All-Star, an Olympic gold medalist. I wasn't thinking about any of that. I was thinking about the activism and the social justice mm-hmm. and how he fought for civil rights and was right in the thick of it. I mean, this is a guy who was born in the Deep South in Louisiana, whose parents and family were subject to deeply dehumanizing Jim Crow laws. And that shaped his existence, right? I mean, throughout the entirety of his life, this was a man who stood up and spoke out for the things that he knew to be right against laws and thought processes that he knew to be wrong. And I just like have such deep respect, abiding, long living respect for somebody like that who, you know, when it comes to professional athletes, there are, we've seen it, right? I mean, they live among us now, right? They live comfortable lives. Certainly during Bill Russell's era, they weren't compensated in the same way. But for the whole of sports existing, athletes mm-hmm. tend to live more comfortable lives than the rest of society. So you frequently have people who don't speak out and don't want to say anything about what's happening mm-hmm. In the world. Bill Russell was the opposite from the first to the last. And like I have, again, such deep respect for people like that who at potential expense to them say, this is what I think. This is what needs to change. This is what I believe to be right and wrong. And like all to his credit, he's a legend in so many ways and so much of it doesn't have anything to do with basketball.
Absolutely. And there's so many ways to talk about him. And, you know, one thing that really strikes me is, you know, we live obviously in a very kind of like charged moment in society and realizing the ways in which the systemic racism that he fought against, you know, the different ways in which it's manifesting itself now, right? Again, it's maybe not as explicit as some of the things that he dealt with. Doesn't mean it's gone away entirely, but just to think about, again, and I don't want to, it's just tough to think about the fact that there's going to be so many people who pay tribute to him today who are going to criticize the next round of athletes mm-hmm. who take the yep. similar stand that he did. And it goes back to his braveness and just how cool he was. And I just think about like how all the times I was at an All-Star weekend or at an event that he was at, or it's just so cool how much he was around the NBA. You can tell. I can't think of a single player who does not have just the utmost respect for him and what he means to the game and the influence that he still has on players. It's really beautiful. And it's just, he's such a larger than life figure to me. I think yeah. I've told the story on the podcast before. I know it told it to Pina at least, but I remember leaving Charlotte for All-Star Weekend once, and ahead of me in the security line at the airport was Bill Russell.
Yeah.
I was just so taken aback. I've never, ever, ever, ever been that starstruck in my entire life. I was like, this is like an American hero. I was like, why are we even making him go through security? Like, this is... I was like, you know, yep. I was like, do I shake his hand? Do I say something? I don't want to bother this guy. It's just such a larger-than-life figure that... Yeah, I know it sounds silly, but I sometimes can't believe he's real. I know I keep saying that, but when you see all the stories about oh, when his house was vandalized, when the Celtics would go on road trips, or the fact that, you know, that exhibition strike that he led in Kentucky. It's like things like that are just, they're so far removed kind of from what we're dealing with today. It's crazy, man.
So a long time ago, I'm older than you. A long time ago, and
you somehow look younger though, and it's really disconcerting.
It's really just lighting and special effects. But a long time ago, when I was first coming up, I was a senior writer for Boston Magazine, and I had the great fortune to speak with Bill Russell. You mentioned, you know, when his house was vandalized, when the Celtics would go on the road. That was something that a lot of the Celtics, a lot of the black players, had to deal with. I talked to Casey Jones about it one time, and I had the great fortune of speaking with Bill Russell just about life in Boston as a black man. And like, he was so great about it and so thoughtful. And he said, you know, I think about myself first as a human being and as an activist and as an athlete second. But the symbolism of how he handled things in that city, I mean, like all the accomplishments we talk about with him and the Celtics, I think his greatest accomplishment and what really meant so much, not just to the black community, but sports writ large, he was the first black head coach of anyone, of any of the four major sports in America. And he did it in Boston. And for people who don't really understand, Boston has a, let's call it, fraught history with race relations. They were famously, the Boston Red Sox were famously the last team to integrate in Major League Baseball. And then you have Bill Russell, who's this transformative figure who, despite the fact that his house was vandalized, was still a beloved figure in Boston and who loved Boston back. Right. And didn't stop fighting for the things that he knew to be right. Didn't excuse the racism that was prevalent in Boston, the undertones of it, sometimes the overtones of it. And yet was this unifying figure. And like the way that he bridged that gap, I don't think that I would have had that grace. Right. I don't think that if I was somebody who was in his position and came home and found my house vandalized or heard slurs on the street, that I could turn the other cheek and go, no, you know, I'm going to keep fighting for these things. But also I can see the good in people who aren't like that. But that was Bill Russell. And like when he was given the Presidential Medal of Freedom by President Obama, he said, I hope that this is an indication that I led a good life. And man, did he.
That's really well said, John. And you nailed it. I mean, yeah, you and I are not going to be able to unpack kind of fully that era of American society and the race relations in Boston. And I think you bring up a good point. Like, he did love the city, and there are black people in Boston who loved him. And there's so many layers to that situation, and it was so complicated. But you mentioned just the kind of the, you know, I also don't blame the people who don't have grace, but just kind of the integrity which he dealt with everything that came his way in his life it's really beautiful. And I do want to talk about him as a basketball player for a second, only in the sense that I just love how much of a competitor he was. Like you know, just even forget the championships and all those things. Like, we always hear these stories about, you know, Michael Jordan or et cetera, these people who are kind of these legendary competitors. And I think you can put him in that category. I mean, there's that clip that, you know, a lot of people have shared. I remember watching it when it happened, but he's on stage at like the NBA Awards with all the other centers, and he's pointing at all of them. And he's like, I would kick your ass. Like, that's awesome. You know, I just that competitive spirit that he had. And there's a clip that I saw. Again, a lot of people have been posting this. I think he's talking to Kobe Bryant in an All-Star game. And he's like, I like to watch players. He's like, the way I like to watch basketball is I want to see what agenda players have when they're on the court. And then what they're doing to try to fulfill that, you know, I'm paraphrasing. And I think that's just such an insight into, he wants to see people compete, right? He wants to know what their agenda is. Is it to win? Is it to compete? And again, when you talk about his legacy as a basketball player, it goes so much more than the rings he won, but his approach to the game and, you know, wanting to be better than Wilt. Man, I just don't know that we have a figure like that anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they had some epic battles for sure. They pushed each other. I think they made each other better. That competition, that level of effort that you're talking about on the court, and again, for me, all that's great, but like what he did off the court, like just is everything for me. But that level of effort that he gave in his life, it had to be exhausting.
Yeah.
Like like, think about how good he was as a basketball player. That alone takes supreme drive, focus, determination, just like knowing that you have to do it season in and season out. And then on top of that, off the court, there's no rest for him. There was never any rest for him. Up till he was 88, he was just still going. He was just incredibly dynamic. And I want to bring it back to that Medal of Freedom thing too, because he didn't ever like tune out, right? In 2017, he posted a picture kneeling with that Medal of Freedom around his neck in solidarity with the NFL players who had been attacked and criticized by then President Trump. And I'm like, this guy doesn't take any time off. He's an octogenarian. And he's like, oh yeah, I'm not going to let this moment pass. He could, like, of all the people on the planet who could afford to let a pitch go by because of all the goodwill and effort that they had accrued, right? All the equity that they had put in, it would be Bill Russell. And he's like, nah, not taking this moment off. Like, that's Bill Russell.
That's such a great point. Yeah, that's such a good point. The effort, man, it has to be exhausting. All the things that he dealt with, and I'll just never know how someone's able to lead a life like that. And you mentioned, yeah, kneeling with that medal, like, that's truly, truly iconic. People use that phrase like freely now, jokingly now. That's truly iconic. And yeah, like you said, never let a pitch go by. Taking that stand again when people were being criticized by literally the president. Again, it's just integrity. That's what that is. That always being on the right side of history. It's really remarkable.
Because obviously, you know, he's being feted today. Everybody's remembering him. He is one of the greats of all time and is remembered that way. But do you think that he got his full due? Like, did people properly remember Bill Russell and his legacy? Because we have an SI Now newsletter. It's written by Josh Rosenblatt. I highly recommend everybody subscribe to it. It's really good. Every day he's got some really fresh stuff in there. But so he unearthed this story from Frank DeFord, a legendary SI writer, and he has a quote in it from Tommy Heinsohn, who's also a Celtics legend, longtime Celtics color play-by-play guy. Here's the quote. I want to read it to you. And I think this frames it up. And this doesn't even get into the social justice, civil rights activism. This is just the basketball component. Tommy Heinsohn, quote, look, all I know is the guy won two NCAA championships, 50-something college games in a row, the 56 Olympics. Then he came to Boston and won 11 championships in 13 years. And they named an effing tunnel after Ted Williams.
Yeah, I saw that quote.
Excellent point.
Yeah. I think that probably, like, contemporarily, I don't know that he necessarily got enough respect. I do think later in his career, like, I think what the NBA did, like, naming the Finals MVP trophy after him, like, a small but great gesture. I loved seeing him at the Finals every year. I think they did a great job bringing him, like I said, to All-Star every year. I do think that, at least within the NBA community, at least as long as I've been covering the NBA, there's been so much respect for him, and you can see it with the players. And again, I think his willingness to kind of continue to take stands has really endeared him to players as well. That it's tough. I mean, how do you properly pay tribute to someone like him, right? Like, it would take so many lifetimes for most other people to fit what he did in one, that I don't know how you could even like properly really pay tribute to him. But I do think at the very least, like, the respect and support I've seen from the NBA community for him, at least since I've been covering the league, at least that I think has matched what he deserves. But I'm with you. I mean, like, where do you stop with him? Like, truly a transformational figure and a leader in so many different ways.
What a life. I mean, honestly, what a life. Like, can I throw out one more thing?
Yeah, please.
He managed to do something in addition to all of this other stuff that I thought was impossible, which is make me think fondly of a Boston Celtic. Like, right? I mean, like, the guy's just like, he's just transformative and like, what a life lived. And the league, not just the league, but the country, you called him an American hero. That's exactly right. Yeah. I mean, during the civil rights movement, when he just didn't take a moment off. And every moment after that, for him to stand up for equality and civil rights is just, that is the defining legacy. And if he had done nothing else, it would have been an incredible life. And he did so much more.
Yeah. No, we're honestly, we're lucky to have shared time with him. You know what I mean? Is the way I look at it. You know, we could talk about Bill Russell all day. There's so many great tributes. Like, please read that Frank DeFord story. Read the Chris Mannix story. But
yeah,
whatever you can read about Bill Russell, his memoir, our good buddy Michael Pina, back when he was writing for GQ, wrote a piece about Bill Russell's memoir, which is harrowing in moments, but just so informational and educational in so many ways. Highly recommend people. I believe it's called Second Wind. Highly recommend people read that. Yeah, man. Like you said, what a life. I think that's the best way to put it. We're going to move on now, talk about a little bit of other things going on in the NBA, hit some mailbag questions. No easy way to kind of segue out of that, obviously. But again, Bill Russell, like you said, man, what a life. Please read whatever you can about him. Truly incredible. We're going to get to something else, though, that's near and dear to your heart that you texted me about. You're like, we got to talk about this. And I don't know how I missed it, frankly. But your Philadelphia 76ers, the cheaters that they are, the rule breakers that they are, disgusting, should be forced to sit Embiid for the whole season, if you ask me. tampering with PJ Tucker, that's the allegation. They're being investigated for it by the NBA. All I'm going to say is it's real convenient that PJ Tucker had had this deal lined up. James Harden just took the perfect amount of pay cut to fit him under the salary cap, etc. The league's now investigating them. The Knicks are also being investigated for potentially tampering with Jalen Brunson. John, I mean, where do you want to go with this first? Do you want to go with the Sixers? Do you want to go with how tampering is insane? Your thoughts on this issue as it pertains to your beloved Sixers?
Well, as my longtime friend Jim Waxman would say, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. So kudos to them on this one. So yeah, Woj broke this and said that the league is investigating possible tampering and early contact centered around the franchise's summer free agency class of James Harden, PJ Tucker, and Daniel House. Basically, how do you get Harden to decline his $47 million option and sign a 1+1 deal that cut his salary to $33 million and gave the team more flexibility to sign Tucker and House? Okay. But is it tampering really when it's your guy who's already there, right? I mean, isn't it something that general managers and owners do with players of importance all the time? Isn't LeBron James constantly having conversations about what players they want to bring in, which players they want to ship out? I mean, if Harden was still with the Nets, if Harden was with the Rockets and Daryl Morey was like, hey, why don't you come here? You know, we'll cut your salary back a little bit and then we'll have like an under the table deal for another contract down the road where we'll make you whole. Then it's one thing. So you got a guy in house. He already probably knows that you're going to make him whole. He wants to win. They get PJ Tucker when they wouldn't have probably otherwise been able. They wouldn't have otherwise been able to bring him in. I don't think that this is the biggest deal in the world, but of course the league does. And my problem with it right before you and I started talking was that at that moment before we started recording, the league hadn't been looking at the Knicks, who had signed Rick Brunson as an assistant coach mere moments before hiring or before acquiring Jalen Brunson. And I'm like, well, how is that not tampering? But so now they're looking into that as well. I think both of these, frankly, are much ado about nothing. I just find it odd how and why and when the league decides to adjudicate these matters and then how it meets out justice.
I mean,
justice, like, in quotes.
Yes, exactly. I mean, the Bojan Bogdanovic trade that didn't happen, probably the most infamous example because it ended up not going through for the Bucks. But it's to me, tampering, it's like marijuana at this point. It's like, are we really still doing this? Are we really still pretending this is an issue? Are we really, like you said, like the justice, quote unquote, is inconsistent? Do we even consider it justice? The punishment's inconsistent. Like, when are we testing for it, etc.? Like, this is so stupid. And the league, I mean, how many podcasts, stories, videos, first take segments does the league get out of free agency movement? It's maybe arguably the most popular thing about the league now, frankly. And you're trying to restrict that on some level. You're trying to slow that down for who? As you mentioned, this is the fact that the Knicks can hire Jalen Brunson's dad and the league is going to turn around and say, oh, there's something fishy here. It's like, you think? this all went out the window once you hired. Is the guy's dad not supposed to talk to him now?
Has anybody at the league been to Summer League? Like, yeah. Everybody's talking to everybody. These things, I mean, this is, if you were going to actually clamp down on tampering, then you would have to, like, nobody could have a cell phone. No yeah. players could talk to each other. Yep. If you had, like, an assistant coach who went to a different team that you liked, can't talk to him, or a general manager who got elevated and got hired as president for another team, forget about talking. I mean, like, all of a sudden, that communication that's rampant in the league, and by the way, it doesn't just happen. That information trading, that swapping, doesn't just happen, you know, between players or coaches and executives. Happens with the media. All the whole league is built on this information ecosystem. You really want to rip that down for what? I mean, like, to suspend, like, or to acquire, like, to delete a draft pick or something yeah. because they had a conversation that predated some artificial date that you would yes. set down. Like, oh, you can talk on June 1, but not on May 31st. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
It's just exhausting. It's like, why are we doing this? And it's like, for a second round pick too. It's like that. Like, they're not going to do anything of consequence either.
Well, I wonder about that because so Derek Bodner, previously of The Athletic, he now is out on his own running the Substack, the
and
Daily Sixers.
He does
Sixers
a great
newsletter.
Job, by the way. Great job he covering does, the Sixers. Yeah.
If you're ever looking for Sixers news, he's one of the best in the business. But he wrote a whole thing about this, and he revisited the Joe Smith tampering allegations where that contract, basically he signed a contract for far under market value for like 1 year that allowed them to acquire various places, people, and like replace Wally Szczerbiak back in the day. And they got dinged a ton of first round draft picks.
David Stern effed them up for sure. That one.
They yeah. did. And
didn't
I think
they
maybe the
void
league
the contract too?
Yeah, they went real overboard on that in a way to like try to send a message. And I think the league since then has kind of learned its lesson and decided not to be as harsh there. However, there is some precedent for this type of quote-unquote tampering being more harshly dealt with than maybe some other forms of it. So I'm wondering about that. And I'm especially wondering, and Derek made this joke in his newsletter, how Sixers ownership will deal with it. Because as we've previously seen, anytime the league office puts a hot light on Josh Harris and the owners, they immediately toss people under the bus. I mean, Sam Hinkie had two Colangelos foisted upon him and then had to resign as a result of
I should have known this would all roads lead back to Hinkie with you
all
people.
Roads
it's all
roads
you guys
back.
Are just oh my god enough already with the Hinkie guy enough
I'm this was just a way of saying I am not super confident that Josh Harris will steel himself and fight back against whatever punishment the league meets out.
I
here
see. First of all, the Simmons-Embiid partnership was an abject failure. That proved itself on the court.
For sure.
You can thank Hinkie for that. Secondly, isn't there also...
Hinkie didn't draft
Simmons. Good point. Isn't there also something shady going on where Michael Rubin... Oh, I'm really talking out of my ass right now. This is going to get me in trouble.
Perfect.
But Michael Rubin like left the team ownership, right?
Yeah.
There's something weird going on there. That sounds like... That sounds like an avenue for him.
Investigate Michael Rubin.
Like, certainly, like, if he wanted to give James Harden, like, $10 million from the Fanatics account, he could do that round and elide any suspicion, theoretically. That there's just something weird about how he left that situation. And then, but seemingly...
For people who don't know, Michael Rubin was a part owner, a minority owner for the Philadelphia 76ers, is very rich, very famous.
But also their most visible owner, even though he was not the...
Easily.
Yes.
Easily. I mean, like, anytime you see something of Michael Rubin, like, online, he's, like, on a jet with Meek Mill and Jay-Z.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, or at a concert with Harden and Embiid and whomever, and, like,
he threw
somebody
the white
very
party.
Famous
I think
performing.
He threw, like, the white party that had a bunch of... NBA players there. By white party, I mean dress code. by the
yeah.
way, yeah,
he's yeah. white, but everybody yeah. else, right? Various yeah. people there, everybody wearing yeah. white. This is something that was, as a quick aside, Michael Rubin is in his 50s now. He goes extremely hard.
He does go hard.
Like, I would need a timeout from that life.
There is something interesting going on there, certainly, But yes, I think we're in complete agreement here. Tampering is so ridiculous. Who is the league doing this for? I guess this like some small market owners are maybe upset about it, and they're incredibly touchy after all the star movement that's gone on the last few years. But if you're, and I'm not saying that they're complaining, but if you're like the Oklahoma City Thunder, just to use a small market team, and you think like tampering is the reason that like the Sixers are getting PJ Tucker and not you, like we all know that's preposterous. We all know that's not the reason this is happening. Like, just move on. Just stop investigating it. The only reason it exists is because you're investigating it. You know what I mean? Like, that's otherwise no one would care about this. No one would raise an eyebrow. It does not matter.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you're Magic Johnson and you're on some late night talk show and you're then the president of the Los Angeles Lakers and you're openly pining for Paul George.
That was awesome. That was good TV.
Like, I mean, like, it's right out in front of you. Maybe you give him a little slap on the wrist. What are we doing?
You know who else was openly pining, though? Paul George, when he had like two years left on his contract with the Pacers. Yeah. Pretending to be from Los Angeles when he's from Palmdale, I believe. That's a real sore spot.
Zing to everybody Palmdale.
That's a real sore spot, I think. I say that as an L.A. transplant. I have no skin in the game, but I think that upsets a lot of people. But yes, that was awesome. I thought when he was like winking on Jimmy Kimmel, being like, "Yeah, I'd love to get LeBron." That was sick. I love that.
Right. You know what? I'm with you now. Let's put tampering. Let's take it out of the shadows and put it in the spotlight. Yes,
exactly.
Tamper, go ahead. Embiid's contract is coming up at some point, and you know, the Lakers are like, man, we would love him. Of course you would.
Yes.
Who wouldn't?
There is a like incredibly local like show that they used to have on the local news in South Florida called Deco Drive. And I think it was just like a gossip show. I was like too young to watch it. Like I was like, you know, I would love if Pat Riley went on Deco Drive and was like, Embiid, come sign with the Heat. Like that, yeah, that'd be hilarious. That would be good.
That might be my line.
That's where you draw the line.
Pat Riley tampering, but everybody else would be fine.
Shout out to Pat Riley. And just he throws the rings on the Deco Drive table. He's like, Embiid, this is for you.
Also a legend.
John, let's get to some emails. I don't know if have you had the pleasure of answering emails from the Open Floor Globe yet?
I have not. I'm ready for this.
This is my favorite part about hosting the show is I get to pick the emails now. It's a lot of fun. Please keep the emails coming, everyone. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. Really loving all the emails we're getting so far this summer. I thought this was an interesting one. This comes from our friend. Oh, God. I'm going to mess up the pronunciation of his name. And he even sent me a YouTube video to watch to learn the pronunciation of his name, but me being the lazy person that I was this weekend, did not watch it. So I'm going to go with Mr. Levine. I'm not going to even attempt the first name here because apparently Pina messed it up last time. I don't want to suffer the same fate. This is the same emailer who sent us the worst player on a championship team question that derailed this podcast
I enjoyed that.
This was an interesting question. All right, so we got people keep bringing up assist to turnover ratio as a good measure for rating creators, but I really don't understand why. It seems like a really flawed stat to me. Not all assists are created by the pass that led to them, and not every turnover is the result of a pass. It feels like we found out semi-related stats and mashed them together, but it's just as arbitrary as rebound to shot attempt ratio. Am I missing something? I never thought this deeply about assist to turnover before, and frankly, I'm a little intrigued. John, your thoughts?
What I like about the question is that it hints at what's important about stats in general and why most of them are flawed is the context, right? Mm-hmm. He's right in that not all turnovers are a result of the actual pass. A lot of different things can go wrong there. It's kind of like, usage rate matters when applied to assist to turnover ratio, right? If you have a high usage guard who's got the ball in his hands at all times, who's ball dominant, I mean, the chances are his turnover ratio is going to go up, right? And that's sometimes you have to take the bad with the good. You have a player that you like giving the ball to that much. chances are that he's going to turn the ball over at times. Similarly, like, you know, this is something that I've debated with friends who are sort of like basketball enthusiasts, but not as deeply into the weeds as maybe we are, where they'll say, oh, you know, did you see so-and-so's plus minus from this game? It drives me nuts. Plus minus in individual games is like one of the most useless stats most of the time. There, every now and again, you'll get one where you go, okay, I guess that's kind of a good snapshot for this like one game, but like there's so many different factors that go into it. So
I will say hilariously, like, point, sorry, not to cut you off, but plus
no,
minus,
please.
Like, absolutely the story of Joel Embiid's career, though, which is funny. Like,
I mean,
and you can pick out individual games, like Toronto Game 7, where it was like minus 10.
Toronto Game 7, I knew you were going to bring that up.
When Greg Monroe
game. The Greg Monroe game. Yeah. So therein lies, to button it all up, that's another good point. Context matters.
Yes. I could not agree
for
more. And I will say, like, to your point about high usage, like Chris Paul is a perfect example of why assist to turnover is a good stat, because he has the ball in his hands literally every minute he's on the court. A very ball dominant player, even if he's not shooting a lot, and famously very low turnovers. I mean, the guy doesn't turn the ball over. It's when he does turn it over, it's pretty shocking, which is why it was weird some of the games he's had in the playoffs. So I agree, like, It's kind of a weird stat when you think about it. Not to mention assists, if we really want to get into it. We could probably do a whole episode on just assists in general. But, like, John Stockton doesn't actually have that many assists. Like, that Utah... So
this is a hot take.
So
please explain.
I have this fantasy where if I'm going to be in the studio with Rick Ross one day, and they put me on the soundboard... And I'm just hitting the Maybach Music drop button over and over and over again. It's just gonna be you know what I mean? Like, just hitting the Maybach Music button all over again. That's the Jazz scorekeeper with John Stockton exists. Okay, they're not. They're just hitting.
I was wondering how you were gonna land that.
They're just hitting the assist button over and over again. They don't care what's happening on the court. You're telling me this guy had like 7,000 more assists than Jason Kidd or whatever the number is? No, he didn't. It was home cooking. I like, and you'll never convince me otherwise.
So assists in particular. You're right. I love, you know, as a lover of basketball, my favorite position was always point guard. Guys who were great passers were always like Magic was my favorite player growing up, as non-Sixers edition, of course. Just because I loved he was like such a magician, obviously Magic, with the ball. And like, so anybody who could pass and like do things like that on the court were really highly entertaining for me. But even at a young age, I wondered like, okay, it does seem kind of arbitrary. Like if he makes the shot, or does it within two steps, then it's an assist. But like the hockey assist that gets you that assist doesn't really count for anything. And there's no way to quantify it. And it, like, there are a lot of things that are arbitrary, but I think it just goes back to the original point that there's no stat really that's flawless.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, like, I guess you can say like counting stats like points or something.
Even points though. How many shots did you take? You know,
right. Yeah. Exactly. So any of these stats, I think, are like just a small snapshot into what's happening, and you have to take them with a grain of salt, and then you also have to contextualize them.
I will say all the stats that showed Jokic had a better season than Embiid, I'm fully in support of those.
We're 30 something minutes into the pod.
Did you have me on SI Weekly to talk about Jokic? I honestly can't remember. I just think it's interesting that, you know, I wrote this story, in my opinion, a fun story about a fun personality, why this player should be MVP. I thought it could have been a two-parter for SI Weekly.
I love Jokic. I love Jokic. I think when we did our SI staff picks, unsurprisingly, I think I was one of two people who voted for Embiid. I think Mannix might have been the other.
I think the other guy wrote the Embiid story. So,
yeah. Right after getting access to Embiid, I think he voted for Embiid.
But, anyway, we don't need to do the MVP. I'm never writing again about why certain players should win MVP. That's like...
Why? Did people come out of the woodwork?
It was just so much, and people are like, just so many... which I honestly like genuinely respect the passion. Like I felt that way about Dwayne Wade in 2009. He should have won MVP over LeBron. But people are like, this guy thinks Embiid is trash. And it's like, I'm saying this guy had the second best season of any NBA player. And it's like, I think he's trash. It's like, let's just all take a deep breath.
In the same way that we were talking about context when applied to sports.
Yeah.
Or stats. Nuance is important. And yet, sports frequently, especially on Twitter, does not lend itself to gray areas.
Of course.
Especially not in Philadelphia. So that's hardly surprising.
So anyway, yeah, I'm staying out of the MVP wars for the foreseeable future. Shout out to Jokic, though, who said that
great season.
Playing great basketball is like eating ice cream every day. Even if you love ice cream, you get bored of it. Just what a legend. What an absolute legend.
Can I tell a quick Jokic story?
Please, please.
The first time I met / interviewed Jokic, I'd flown to Denver and I was in the hallway. I hadn't met him before. And all of a sudden he comes, you know, lumbering up.
Yeah. He truly embodies the phrase lumbering. He doesn't walk.
He's a lumberer.
He merely lumbers. Yes.
Yeah. So he was lumbering and this was bigger Jokic. This was like pre kind of
big
getting
honey.
A little bit
yeah.
spelter.
Big honey. Yeah.
He was thick.
Yeah.
Two C's. And he came up with a bag, a big bag, like a gallon sized plastic bag of loose candy. And he was just handing it out to people in the hallway and stopped to give me some loose candy and then continued on his way. And eventually, you know, we had our interview or whatever. But that was my introduction to Nikola Jokic on a random day in like, I don't know, it was like April, early April. He's just it was right before the playoffs. Pre-game candy bag for everybody in the hallway.
He's a lot of fun. The Nuggets have a fun vibe. When I got to do my Jokic story, unfortunately, this stuff was all off the record. Like, I don't mean to tease our listeners, but Mike Malone, absolute riot. I love Mike Malone, their coach. Mm-hmm. We were talking about that series versus the Jazz with the Jokic Murray pick and roll. Good dude. Shout out to the Nuggets, all vibes team. We got another email. This one comes in from Josh Crane. He says, hey, Rohan and Chris, RIP Pina. By the way, Pina's doing well. Quick Pina update. He does appear to be reading a lot. He's consistently posting books he's reading. He's reading to his kid about the Celtics and stuff already. It's terrible. Real bummer.
He sent me a picture of reading to his child about that. And the page that it was turned to was the Allen Iverson page.
Mm.
And I said, good, you should raise the child as a Sixers fan. Yeah. He said, no, we already went through the Celtics material. So, yeah.
Terrible. I got to send that kid highlights of the 2012 Eastern Conference Finals soon. So Josh writes, hey, Ron and Chris, and, you know, the dead of the offseason seems like a good time to think about possible NBA expansion to Seattle and Vegas. If that ends up happening, how will the NBA balance the conferences? I think they'd want to move the Pels and Grizz to the East, which would be wild since you'd think those teams immediately move into the top tier of the conference. Would teams at the top of the East right now, like Milwaukee, Boston, or Philly, oppose such a move? I'm also curious if you have any idea how the Vegas and Seattle rosters would be built. How has it happened in the past? Any fun suggestions? Love the show, Josh. P.S. A bonus question, best current NBA player nicknames. I want to do a whole nicknames episode. I feel really passionate about nicknames, so Josh, we'll keep that in our back pocket for now. John, what do you think about NBA expansion? I will say, for what it's worth, Adam Silver did his finals press conference. I don't remember the reporter who asked the question, but kudos to them because it was hilarious. And they basically were like, Adam, there's a report that the NBA is looking to expand to Seattle and Vegas. Like, essentially, like, care to comment? And Adam Silver had to be like, oh, those reports aren't true. Like, really put him on the spot. I think Silver was even smiling as he answered it. But, I think it's coming, especially as the league looks to make up some of the money it lost from COVID, etc. John, wherever you want to go with this.
I mean, I obviously have no inside information on this. I will just respond as a fan of the game in the NBA. Yes, and please.
I mean, it's really
way past. Oh, Seattle and Vegas? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, like, but I don't. I
that
want...
sounds. We have a team. The NBA has a team in. And earmuffs if you live there. Oklahoma City. I don't know if you've been to Oklahoma City.
Okay, so...
Look, I don't mean to disparage Oklahoma City, but it is not quite Vegas and Seattle. Seattle and Vegas are two incredible cities. Give them NBA franchises.
Here's what I'll say about Oklahoma City. I feel like I've probably mentioned this a lot before. I went for my Chris Paul story. I had a nice time. Shout out to Gun Izakaya and Goro Ramen, two of the better meals I've had in my NBA travels. But... yes, I do think people get bored there pretty quickly. It's not the biggest city. My issue with expansion is I actually don't think I want more NBA teams. I like the level of competition in the league right now. I think top to bottom, like, teams are really good. Even the bad teams, this is not a unique take, but, like, you know, the Pistons of the world, et cetera, the Rockets, they're generally pretty fun to watch. And I don't like the idea of diluting it. And as much as I don't like the idea of certain cities losing their teams, like, we've seen Oklahoma City, for example, the playoff games there are a lot of fun. Like, does New Orleans really seem like it's supporting basketball right now? Like, if I'm being perfectly honest, I don't, you know, I hate to just be the guy who start offering up cities for a relocation, but yeah, I'm a little bit worried about the dilution of talent. That you're not worried about that in the slightest.
No, look, what are we talking about here? An extra 30 players? Like,
yeah, that's percentage a lot of players.
Percentage-wise, I don't know that will do, because also on, like, in your, when you're thinking about the way that you're presenting it, is you're going to have two new teams and it's going to be, you know, like, all new G Leaguers and college kids. But that's not the way that expansion works, right? There'll be plenty of veterans who are in the expansion draft to populate your team, and then you're sprinkling it. Yeah, are the odds that they won't be great teams in Seattle and Vegas to start? Probably, but let's just think about the hypocrisy here. Your team, the Miami Heat, an expansion team, and immediately became one of the great expansion franchises in the history of not just the NBA, but sports writ large, right? I mean, look at the kind of legacy and organization that they built. So it's not impossible. I don't think that it would dilute the talent pool that much. And also, selfishly, Seattle and Vegas. I would like to go to Seattle and Vegas and watch NBA games. That sounds... I mean, look, we're already doing Summer League in Vegas, right? Like,
yeah.
It's the Raiders are having a good time there. The Golden Knights are having a good time there. Seattle, as we all know, got screwed out of the Sonics. That needs to be made right. I think there's a no-brainer for them.
I definitely agree we need NBA teams in those cities. It's just the manner of how we're getting them there. As far as Josh's questions go, in terms of the rosters being built, there'd be an expansion draft. Teams get to protect a certain number of players. The expansion teams would basically end up with the bottom half. Their choices, right, of the bottom halves of most NBA rosters. I'm with you. Seattle, I think the Thunder still technically, like, have the history of the Sonics, which is so stupid. I don't know why the NBA just, like, whiffs on these, like, layups. It's like, okay, yeah, it's, you want to move the team, whatever. We hate this. At least leave the history behind. Like who is this serving? It's just so stupid. We all want the Sonics back. There's no question. A Vegas team would be really fun. It would genuinely be hilarious to watch which teams want to move to the East, because frankly, I think the teams at the top of the East, whatever, it's the teams in the West who would be clamoring to go East, because the East, for whatever reason, historically, consistently the weaker conference. I don't know how it keeps happening, but that cycle doesn't seem to be ending anytime soon. I think there would be a legitimate competition and, like, bloodthirst from teams to move to the West to the East.
I mean, geographically, there's easy fixes for those two, right? I mean, like, it's probably Memphis and New Orleans.
It makes sense, but I'm telling you, I bet Minnesota would be like, hey, hold on. You know,
Minnesota. You could think about Minnesota.
Yeah, someone would try to get involved here and I think muck things up, because I'm telling you, I think a lot of teams would, like he mentioned, the Pels and Grizz would jump to the top of the conference. A lot of teams would want to move over, not have to deal with some of these Western Conference markets. What would you do?
The NBA.
Yeah.
There's, I get, like, even the bad teams are really good. And any night you could end up, like, those bad teams that you think you're not worried about could end up beating you. So, like, realignment happens in sports all the time. The only thing I see is Seattle and Vegas. Like, like, all of these other things, all these other issues, and I'm more air quotes here, are easily solved by saying this would be good for the league to have franchises in these cities. It's going to grow the game. There's so many good basketball players out there. The league is as talented as it's ever been. It's going to be fine. It's not going to dilute the pool that much. Put the franchises in.
It just truly baffles my mind that we somehow don't have a team in Seattle, like, this huge city.
Yeah.
For so many reasons, but truly, truly baffling. I wonder what they'd name the Vegas team, and I'm curious how, like, hard to lead Oh, you got an idea.
I have an idea.
I was going to put you on the spot, and I didn't want to put you on the spot, so now I'm thrilled that you have an idea. What would you name
Please him? Do. So, as you might suspect, I have thought about this quite a bit. I am a Philadelphian, spent my entire life there. I was actually born in Las Vegas, so I still have family in Vegas. I moved back to Philly, or her family moved back to Philly at a very early age, but I have still affection for the city. I was thrilled when they got the Raiders. I know that it sucked for Oakland, but I thought it was cool that the Golden Knights, and like the idea that, oh, we can't have sports in Vegas because there's gambling there, was preposterous to begin with. I'm glad we've done away with that. So I've been thinking about this for a long time. Here's my team name, because it doesn't exist in professional sports currently.
Wow.
And I think it's perfect for both the city's identity and the marketing. The Las Vegas Villains.
The Villains.
The Villains. You lean into Vegas as the anti-hero. You wear some black. You already got the black with the Raiders. You go full bore into this whole we're the bad guys bit.
Very interesting. First of all, they're going to have to be very careful with the mascot to not offend any groups. I'm intrigued by Villains. I was going to say something so lame that you're going to laugh at how pathetic of an idea. But like, are we sure they can't just be called the Las Vegas Dice?
The Dice.
You know,
I suppose they could be called the Dice.
Right? Their fan, you know, their fan group, you know, the name of their fan, the Dice Rollers, the mascot.
In general.
The mascot is just some big, jovial, like, pair of dice. You know, just
in
you
general,
lean into...
Please,
go ahead.
I'm not, in general, a huge fan of team names that are singular. Heat, Magic, there's
Thunder.
A zillion others...
Yeah.
Thunder, like Lightning. That doesn't do a ton for me. I also like the alliteration to Villains. This is just there's no wrong answers here. We're having an open brainstorming session. I'm throwing it out there.
I just got
for the expansion when they decide to start thinking these things through. I'd like to put Villains in the hopper and see if the cat licks it up off the stoop.
That's not the worst idea. I just got a text from our producer, Shelby Royston, who says, the Villains mascot is the guy who ties people to the railroad tracks and is twirling his mustache.
The handlebar mustache. Shelby knows. This is it can be a cartoonish kind of villain, right? So that, as you mentioned, we don't offend any specific groups of people, which we wouldn't want to do. But I think nobody really adopts that. The Raiders do, right? The Raiders have been the bad guys forever.
Yeah.
But now you've got that crosstown component in the other league. I love it.
Yeah, I do like the idea of like special home games. You just bring in, it's like we got Willem Dafoe courtside. We got, you know, whoever is like famous for playing Villains. We can get him. I'm warming up to it. Shelby's text really has me warming up to it. Although I do think we're sleeping on Dice a little bit. I'm just going to throw that out there. I think that got swept under the rug. There's a lot of good
Dice. If you
like,
do say
dice.
So.
So, like, you just think about all the half-court, like, games they could be playing with dice with fans during breaks in action at halftime, etc. A lot of potential there for interactions. I don't know what they call it in the biz. But, yeah, a lot of ways to engage
fans. In that instance, like, why are we not doing, like, wasn't there a USFL team, the Gamblers?
I think that sounds right.
I mean, that's so on the nose, though.
Lean
I don't know.
All the way in.
Like... I don't know if the league is that far into it's okay to gamble on sports that they want to call the franchise the Gamblers, but maybe.
I'm warming up to the Las Vegas Villains. All right, John, there's a couple fun things I wanted to hit here at the end. First and foremost, I need to apologize to a valued Open Floor Globe member. You're all valued. I just wanted to point that out there. But Hedda, who wrote in much earlier this year, asking me to do the Love Island Minute every episode. I said I would do it, and guess what? I haven't been doing it, even though I've been watching this current season of Love Island like a hawk. Hedda writes in, "Dear Rohan, yes, this email is directed directly at you and no one else. In the last few episodes, there's been no Love Island Minute updates, and as the reader who requested it to begin with, I am outraged and saddened by the sudden turn of events. I was a bit sad when Mike announced he was taking a break, but very happy when I heard the reason. Big congrats to Mike and his wife. The blow of this loss was lessened by you taking over, as I hope for even more Love Island content. But you've not only let me down, you've let the whole Open Floor Globe down. Please bring back the Love Island Minute. Much love, Hedda, who adds, formerly of Norway, now of Australia. She's just kicking it down under. Also adds, please note this is in no way a serious email. Hopefully a comedic request. She still loves the show. Hedda, thank you so much for writing it. And you're right. Thank you to the Open Floor Globe for holding me accountable. I promise to do the Love Island Minute. I haven't been doing it. And let me tell you, this season's been an absolute firecracker. We just got out of movie night. The Casa Amor movie night combination is some of the greatest producing in the history of television. Ek and Sue reminds me of my high school girlfriend, straight up liar, just lying straight to your face. I'm kidding. But shout out to Ek and Sue.
High school girlfriends catching strays.
Yeah, sorry, high school girlfriend. But shout out to Ek and Sue, just a generational talent and straight up liar. I'm sick of Andrew and Tasha. Although Andrew had one of the all-time quotes in the history of the show that I can't really repeat on this podcast, but sick of Andrew and Tasha. I think Luca post-movie night, I'm disgusted by his actions. He's completely overreacting to the clips of Gemma and Billy. The suit Billy wore to movie night, I can't take him seriously ever again. That was pathetic, comical, terrible dressing. Someone needed to step in. I think that Paige and Adam should continue to crack on. I like their chemistry, and frankly, they have a good chance to win the show. So those are my thoughts on what's been happening over at the Villa in Mallorca. It's been a hot season, John.
Sounds incredible. I've never seen the show. I'm aware of its existence. I don't watch a ton of TV as it is. I watch very little reality television. I do have a guilty pleasure, which for me is Below Deck. I don't know if you watch
on
Below
Bravo,
Deck.
Correct? So
I'm in on all the Below Decks.
Okay.
And in fact, yesterday, on Sunday, I was out and about with my wife and some other people in Los Angeles, and we were in Hermosa Beach.
Oh, thanks for the invite. That's cool.
You're in Florida as we record this. Would have been a tough commute for you. But so everybody in LA has a celebrity sighting list. Mm-hmm. And like my all-time top celebrity sighting was John Goodman. That was like an incredible experience.
Awesome.
But I had my first ever Below Deck sighting yesterday, which I thought was pretty cool.
That's awesome. Yeah, I would freak out if I saw some of the Love Island castmates in real life.
I tell you, I did not comport. So we live in Los Angeles. You run into celebrities, not like all the time, but it happens enough where you're like, you see people, I have never once, including when John Goodman leaned across me to throw out trash at the car wash, said a word to a celebrity. Below Deck lady walks by. Colleen goes, please don't. Couldn't help myself. Shout her name. I'm waving.
You're waving. No.
Yeah, I was waving to her. So Below Deck, different vibes.
Yeah, definitely different vibes. I don't know the last time I said hi to a celebrity. I mean, I didn't even say hi to Bill Russell, who I was like getting emotional about. I think if I saw like the lead singer from The National somewhere, I'd like, in my ideal celebrity meet cute scenario, I see Matt Berninger of The National at a coffee shop and I buy his coffee for him. That way it's like, it's subtle. I'm not blowing up his spot. I'm not asking him to, you know, I think I remember the last time I said hi to a celebrity. It was John Legend at an SI swimsuit party. And I had had a few drinks and I was like, John, that song They Say that you have with Common, super underrated. And he started singing the hook. And I was like, this is the most beautiful thing that's ever happened to me in my life. And then he was like, if you like that song, I think you should check out my new album. And I was like, dude.
John Legend was pitching you on his new album.
Yeah,
amazing.
Absolute pitch from John Legend on the new album. And then lastly, this is something that we briefly talked about before the show. You mentioned your wife is busy with her job currently covering the NFL, giving you some alone time at the house. I'm at my parents' house in Florida, which has given us both some time to watch some really garbage movies that we otherwise would not necessarily be watching. Do you have like a favorite, like this movie sucks, but I'm going to watch it anyway? What's kind of your lowbrow go-to vibe? What are you enjoying watching these days?
So, again, haven't watched a ton of TV, but I do like the occasional, like we were describing it as sort of like the bar being an airplane movie.
Yes.
Right? Because
yes.
like when you're on an airplane, I'll watch anything.
Yeah, Uncharted. Like,
doesn't really matter.
Yeah, give it to me.
I'm trying to think of one that I've watched. I mean, like, this doesn't really count because it was pretty critically acclaimed, but The Batman just came out,
mm-hmm.
and I wasn't going to watch that. I do like superhero movies, but this seemed, like, even for a Batman movie, like, pretty dark and disturbed. However, I was bored as hell, so I was like, I'm going to put it on. It's 3 hours of Paul Dano, who plays the Riddler, like, really chewing some scenery. Like, I don't know if you've seen it, but I was like, what are we doing here? Like, who asked for this interpretation of the comic classic Batman?
There's also a scene in that movie where the Riddler is at a coffee shop waiting to be caught by the police, and his mm-hmm. latte art is a question mark, yeah. which makes a lot of, like, did he ask the barista to do a question mark? Did he learn latte art?
Did he do it
for the purposes of getting caught by the police? Yeah, I've been watching some, like, I'm like, what is a very an action movie I can fall asleep to? So Unknown, the Liam Neeson classic, Nonstop, another Liam Neeson. Like, someone asked me the other day, it's like, what sells you on a movie? I'm like, give me, like, a goofy premise and I'm in. And it's like, oh, Liam Neeson has to stop a terrorist while on a plane who says they're going to kill someone every 20 minutes. I want to watch that movie. Liam Neeson has forgotten his identity and someone else has assumed it. And there's a plot to maybe assassinate someone. Yeah, I want to watch that movie. And I mentioned what spurred this conversation, Olympus Has Fallen. Mm-hmm. Gerard Butler is a disgraced Secret Service agent who, after a tragic incident involving the president and his wife, is now single-handedly trying to prevent, like, a hostile takeover of the White House. Truly, truly incredible stuff. Like, really awful, violent movies that I can't get enough of.
Very violent, incredibly jingoistic. That series becomes, like, more and more problematic in terms of how patriotism is applied moving forward. But you did mention some tropes that I think are really interesting, including, like, if you're on an airplane, like the characters on an airplane, or there's an assassination attempt, and or the president is involved. So I want to throw out an older school one that I did just recently watch, AMC. Have you seen Air Force One with Harrison Ford? Of course,
come on, man.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to make sure that you caught that one, yeah.
The president either has to be, like, barely in the movie, or they can also fight. Those are the only versions of the president I want to see in my cinema. Like, they have an 8-second press conference clip talking about how the country needs to get back on its feet, or they're actually fighting the bad guys themselves. Well, John, I think that'll do it this week's episode. I'm sure
that'll wrap it up.
Yeah, I think I'm sure we could do another 30 minutes on the bad movies we've watched recently, but John, this was a lot of fun. I'm glad we finally got to host together. Shout out to that one reviewer again who said that he doesn't want to listen to a Sixers Homer podcast. Well, guess what, buddy? We came right back to it. I hate to break it to you.
Just a dusting this time.
Yeah.
Just a sprinkling.
Yeah.
And it was germane to what's happening in the league. So I think maybe we get a pass on that.
That's right. As Travis Scott would say, sprinkle a little seasoning on the salad. Don't look that up. That'll do it for this week's episode of Open Floor, though. Please keep your emails coming, openfloormail@gmail.com. Thank you again for everyone who sent their well wishes in for Pina. And please subscribe to John's podcast. John, this is your moment. Tell us about SI Weekly.
Yeah, listen to SIW, SI Weekly, Sports Illustrated Weekly, wherever you get your podcast. This week, on Wednesday, we have the audio version of a story told by Howard Beck about the history behind the phrase 1-2-3 Cancun. So if you're an NBA fan, I urge you to listen to that. It's very funny, and it's got some great stuff from Howard.
Awesome. That's going to be a very fun story. Looking forward to that episode. Chris Herring will return soon. I believe he copied me and went to Mexico City for people who are missing Chris. He'll be back again. Thanks for everyone sending in their well wishes to Mike. I'm making sure he gets all of them. Until then, everyone, please continue to enjoy the NBA offseason.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours.
Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.